So just while I'm setting things up, I'll give a little bit of background. That seems very loud to me. So I'm giving this talk really on behalf of Andrew LaHeath. So I've given presentations as a service on his behalf many times before. And again, we're talking about container orchestration. Okay, that's not quite what I wanted. Right, just a minute. And this time, I'm going to talk about some experiments that he's been doing running LHC workflows on public clouds. And this came out from some work. There's a Research Council's UK Cloud Working Group, and we, in that context, we had a number of cloud providers come along and saying, yes, we'd like to run, we'd like to see what happens when we run your services. So, and Andrew stuck his hand up and said, yes, I'm interested in doing that. So let's... So, and in particular, because Andrew had already had some experience running other work. I know. All right, where's this? Okay. Okay, good. Sorry. Okay, so he decided to take a different approach, and what he really, the interesting question he decided to look at was what common elements can we find to simplify running things so that you don't have to do different things for, you don't have to plumb your infrastructure into one OpenStack cloud, one Open Nebula cloud, whatever else. And at least on the cloud platforms that were offering resources, the common factor was Kubernetes. So we're going to talk a little bit about clouds in high energy physics. We're going to talk about Kubernetes as an abstraction layer, its availability on public clouds, and then specifically about running LHC jobs. We have successful tests so far with CMS, Atlas, and LHCb work, and there will be a little summary and something about future plans. Now, one thing that we have to stress is that the cloud providers stressed very, very, very strongly we were not allowed to talk about performance. So there's going to be nothing about the performance. At some point when we pay for resources, then we can talk about that, but these were grants. So there's been use of clouds in high-energy physics for many years as a flexible infrastructure which traditional grid middleware can run on. As an alternative to traditional grid middleware, and also as a way of obtaining additional resources quickly. And sometimes there are really large amounts of resources available. But this has generally involved different methods for provisioning VMs on demand, which join a Condor pool or directly run an experiments pilot. And there are some limitations. As I said earlier, each cloud has its own API. It can be quite a lot of work hooking that in to the workflow management systems. And then some investigations have made use of cloud provider-specific services, sometimes many services. Andrew has examples of that I'm not going to go into. But this is certainly gets to be a problem when you, if you want to use multiple providers. And then finally, there's not very much portability, either between on-premises resources and public clouds or between different public clouds. So the question here is, are there better ways, are there different ways of doing things? So Kubernetes, it's, as many of you already know, it's an open source container cluster manager, originally developed by Google. It schedules and deploys containers into a cluster of machines, and it's able to ensure, for example, that a specific number of instances of an application are running. It provides service discovery, configuration, and secrets, provides access to persistent storage. So the one piece of terminology that will be in here that was worth explaining is the idea of a pod. This is the smallest deployable unit of compute. and this consists of one or more containers that are always co-located, co-scheduled, and run in a shared context. And then pods also share the same network interface, the same namespace, and can share volumes. So why look at Kubernetes? It can be run anywhere. You can run it on-premises and on multiple public clouds. In this case, it's what was available. And the idea is to use it as an abstraction layer to migrate to containerized applications managed by Kubernetes, and then hopefully have something where we can more or less run out of the box on any Kubernetes cluster. And this allows us to avoid vendor lock-in, because we haven't done lots of work to work with AWS or Google or whatever, or Azure. The other part is that we're benefiting then from this very active, much wider development community than just us. There are lots of people using Kubernetes to do these kinds of things. So why not Mesos? So the earlier talks that I've given on Andrew's behalf, he had been focusing on Mesos. So the DCOS is available on many public clouds, and it's the Mesosphere Mesos distribution, if you like. It contains a subset of Kubernetes functionality, but it's a whole big mess of services, typically, whereas in Kubernetes, everything is managed with a couple of binaries. And with the open source version, there are big security limitations. So for this use case, Mesos is not currently a particularly good fit, because we'd have to do much more work to deploy it on each cloud. And I think this, more generally, I was talking to Andrew about this, and more generally, when he first started looking at container orchestration, Mesos definitely had, in almost every area, better developed tools, but Kubernetes has really caught up fast. So, anyway, instead of this, now, what are we looking at? We're looking at, so this would be a situation where we are doing some VM provisioning. Each cloud, each resource has its own API. You have to do something to accommodate each one. But what we'd like to have is a single API talking to Kubernetes at each resource. And therefore, we can imagine our on-premises resources and our public cloud being used in exactly the same way. So looking at the availability on public clouds, and in this case, we were talking in the UK about Google, Azure, and AWS. So Google and Azure both have native support. At the moment, I think it was only Google that has node auto-scaling. There are a variety of command line tools for automating the deployment, enabling production quality Kubernetes clusters on AWS and other clouds. And then there are also third-party companies providing Kubernetes as a service. One example that Andrew had used was StackPoint Cloud, but that's not the only one. And this is clearly an area where we can expect these crosses to disappear over time. And some of this has changed just in the time of these experiments. So for running LHC jobs, in principle, this is very straightforward. The main requirements are SQUIDs for CVMFS and Frontier, an auto-scaling pool of pilot worker nodes with CVMFS, and credentials for joining the HT Condor pool or pilot system. So for the SQUIDs, we can use a replication controller, ensures a specific number of a specified number of SQUID instances is available at all times, and we can use a service to provide access through a fixed alias and a DNS alias for a virtual IP, which points to all of the SQUIDs. And then we need a pool of workers, so we want to have a pool of worker pods which scale up if there's work, but we also want them to scale down when there is not much work, because we are, after all, making something that's going to be used on metered public services, where, although this work was done with grants, if you were paying for it, you certainly don't want to pay for idle nodes. So initially, Andrew tried using just Kubernetes functionality on its own, the replication controller and the horizontal pod autoscaler. This scales the number of pods to maintain a target load. And here we can see CMS Monte Carlo production jobs submitted, and then at the end, when the work runs out, we see the pods being killed. So for CPU intensive activities, this works reasonably well, but there can be problems. So autoscaling based on CPU usage isn't perfect, because CPU usage can naturally vary in the course, in the life of a pilot or job. And Kubernetes won't necessarily kill idle pods when scaling down. Quite likely, and it's quite likely that you will see some running jobs being done. And this has been a problem with Atlas Lost Heartbeat errors, for example. So an alternative approach was writing a custom controller pod which creates the worker pods and scales up when necessary using the vacuum model, and then downscaling only by letting worker pods exit. So it's creating a more custom control for this thing. And it's essentially just a Python script. So one of the things that Andrew noted was that there are GitHub issues open for Kubernetes around providing better control in this area. It's clearly an area of active development. So then the next thing is that we need to provide an X509 proxy to authenticate to the experiment's pilot framework, store a host certificate and key as a secret, and a cron which runs a container which creates a short-lived proxy and updates the secret with this proxy. And then for containers running jobs, the proxy is made available as a file. New containers will have the updated proxy, and the proxy is updated in the already running containers. And then what about CVMFS? So it's a little bit complicated. So currently Kubernetes only allows containers to have private mount namespaces. CVMFS in one container is invisible to others on the same host. Installing CVMFS directly on the agents isn't an option. It would defeat the whole purpose of using Kubernetes as an abstraction layer. So therefore, Andrew tried a proof of concept test using privileged containers, both providing CVMFS and running jobs. And then once Kubernetes supports non-private volume mounts, we'd be able to separate CVMFS and the jobs. And again, this is an area where there are very relevant open GitHub issues and pull requests. We can expect this to move fairly quickly. So the summary of what's being deployed on Kubernetes, essentially fairly straightforward. There's the service, there's the pilot pods, the squid pods over here, the custom controller, and then proxy renewal. And then using we can see the name of the pods there. So the resources that we used for testing. So we use on-premises resources, a small bare metal Kubernetes cluster at RHEL. We used some resources on Microsoft Azure, initially using a CLI tool from Weaveworks, then changed to the Azure Container Service, on Google Container Engine and Amazon, using StackPoint Cloud to provision Kubernetes clusters. And then the initial tests were done with CMS analysis jobs, successfully ran CRAB3 analysis with a test glide in WMS instance at RHEL. Performance, time per event, CPU efficiency and things were similar across the different resources without violating the provider's injunctions not to say too much about it. And then for Atlas and LHCb, have run real Atlas and LHCb jobs on Kubernetes at RHEL at a fairly small scale, using containers which run a startd, which joins an existing Atlas HT Condor pool, and also running the LHCb Dirac agent. And you can see the plots of successful jobs over here. So there are plans to do larger scale larger scale tests with Atlas on Azure. A RHEL Azure site has been configured in Aegis and Panda and have successfully run test jobs, and the plan is to test up to around 5,000 running jobs. Step two, using RHEL storage, the Echo cluster that we heard about. And step two is using Azure Blob Storage via the RHEL Dynafed instance. And then we can use GFAL commands to access the Azure Blob Storage. So now the other thing is federating these. So we've been looking at the standard Kubernetes API, but applied across multiple Kubernetes clusters. So this is very new, but should eventually make it really easy to overflow resources from on-premises to public clouds or from one cloud to another. And the design document includes this, but it hasn't been fully implemented yet. So in summary, Kubernetes is proving a really promising way of running LHC workloads. We've got proved examples of three of the VO's real work running either at RHEL or on public clouds in the UK. It enables portability between on-premises resources and public clouds. So we no longer have to do things one way for grid sites and different things for clouds. And we've successfully run, as I said, Atlas CMS and LHCb jobs. And the next steps are going to be larger scale tests with real Atlas jobs and more exploration of the features that we've had to work around as they develop. So thank you very much. And any questions?
I guess I have two questions. One is scale. What would be a desired scale of these? And the second question would be, how much logic and thinking do you have to turn? Since eventually, once you use enough Google time, you spend money. You have to start making smart money decisions. And how deep is that rabbit hole?
So the scale, I think for these tests, then we're interested in running order thousands of jobs and just demonstrating that there aren't, clearly if somebody comes along with a really big grant, then we'll test it at bigger scale. But I think that the kind of scale that Andrew has been running things at shows to us that we can get real work out of these things and. And the technically things work. You know, we're not going to talk about the relative costs and things. But in terms of how much we might actually use it, well, that clearly is a, well, to say, there's two different sides to it, aren't there? There's, we're some way off it being raw cost competitive with plan stuff in our own data centers. You know, it's outside the scope of this talk, but we're a little way off that. But clearly we have peaks where we have peaks in demand, and it's not smart to provide for our peaks. So I think the way I see this work is that it's about preparing ourselves so that it is as easy as possible to use these other resources. And I think part of the point about this approach is trying to do it in a way where we don't have to do anything different for running things on a cloud. So it takes a bit of work to work out what the most logical way of doing that. But we can certainly imagine a situation at RHEL where containers are the first way that a lot of this work runs. And then when we need or when there are other resources available, then you just move the same kind of workflow across. We're clearly within the limitations of network and storage requirements. I think it's really about developing the capabilities and, really trying to get away from this situation where, you have some, huge amount of magic glue that allows you to use AWS or magic glue that allows you to use this, that, or the other public resource. And, you know, this is one approach to do it. There are many other approaches being explored by others. The HN SciCloud effort and things is taking a different approach. But I think one of the things that is attractive here is that tools like Kubernetes are clearly coming up to the surface, offering relatively similar looking sets of tools, that get exposed in similar ways by different providers, and that's got to make life easier. Any other questions or comments? Okay.